Let's go, baby. Episode number two of the Jets Collective alongside BT Brandon Tierney and ESPN's Rich Samini. My name is Jake Asman. We are excited to be presented by our friends at Prize Picks. Play $5, get $50 instantly in lineups. Use code HMA. Rich Samini took the red eye flight back from the league meetings in Phoenix. Woo. BT's been running all over the place. He's got Stephen A. Smith on his own YouTube channel. Gentlemen, right. How are we feeling after a great episode one last week?
Go ahead, Rich. You take it away there, tired guy. Were you hungover too, Rich, or no?
No, not hungover. I'm dragging a little. I'm gonna have to feed off your guys' energy today a little bit.
Well, that's easy.
We landed about 7:30 in the morning at JFK. Oof. And caught a couple of hours sleep. But now I'm kind of pumped. Now I'm feeling the adrenaline. So we'll get this thing going.
I'm pumped, man. Episode one was great. Let's go. Episode two is going to be better. I couldn't wait for tonight.
Let's go. We got a ton of topics to dive into. I want to remind everyone to make sure you are subscribed to the channel. Big thank you to everyone who helped us hit over 1,000 now. We're already at 2,300, 2,400. We might be at 3,000 by the time we do our next episode. So big thank you to all the Jet fans and everyone out there who's making the Jets Collective what it's going to be, which is going to be awesome. And we certainly have a ton to dive into. So, Rich, what was your reaction when Aaron Glenn is speaking with you guys and he says that Geno Smith is going to take the Jets to the promised land? Did you know right away, that's the headline, that's the takeaway from this 38-minute breakfast press conference setting with the head coach of the Jets?
Yeah, absolutely, Jake. Let me set the scene for you. So it's a round table. There's about 10 writers sitting down. Aaron Glenn is right next to me. Like, we are side by side. We're practically touching. And I asked him the question. It was maybe the fourth or fifth question into the press session. And I said, look, I go, given his struggles last year in Las Vegas, why bring him in and name him the starter instead of bringing in some competition for him? So kind of a pointed question there. And, you know, he's praising Geno. And then all of a sudden, in the middle of that answer, he drops the line. I just feel like I'm going to read it exactly. I just feel like he's the guy that's going to lead us to the promised land. And absolutely, the bells go off. You know, I'm an old newspaper guy, you know, and tabloid journalism with the Daily News back in the day. And so I absolutely know at that point that that's going to be the headline. And I have two reactions to it. One, as a journalist, a guy who is looking for content, it's like, I love it, right? I mean, it gets us a headline. It gets us some good publicity on ESPN. And if I were a fan, though, that's a poor choice of words. I wouldn't want my coach going out and saying that, you know, not when he's a 3-14 coach, talking about a 17-interception quarterback. I thought it was a poor choice of words. I think it's probably been blown out of proportion a little bit, but that's what happens, you know, when the coach has gone through a hellacious offseason with the coaching search, the superpower quote, and now this. There's no honeymoon for Aaron Glenn. He's lost his benefit of the doubt, and that's why it's such a big story.
I don't care what you say. I care what you do. I mean, listen, and I, you know, I am a fan, so I was not offended at all. I also take it with a grain of salt. I mean, at this point, I don't really care what Aaron Glenn says because Aaron Glenn is standing on some really thin ice, number one. Now, what else could he have said? Well, you know what, Rich? And, you know, Rich asked the question. You know, Rich, we went through the option here and two, you know, he's got a pop gun arm that wouldn't have played at MetLife in November. And Malik Willis, $30 million for some unproven guy. Yeah, we don't want to do that. And, you know, this guy's like, he could have denigrated the other. Like, what is he supposed to say at the end of the day? Go ahead.
I didn't mean to cut you off. I mean, those are all valid points. There's a way to praise Geno, which he did. He did praise Geno Smith, and he did say he made some mistakes last year, and he did say those are correctable, and we like him, and Geno wants to be with us. But the promised land,
he
didn't have to say that because that just triggers the alarm bell.
Well, Jake, it is a little hyperbolic, but let's just and you can delineate for me. Do you think he meant the promised land, the Super Bowl? Because let's face it, for the Jets, the promised land at this point is a freaking wild card. I think that's what he meant.
I mean, 8 wins would be an achievement considering they haven't won more than 7 since 2015 when Geno, by the way, was on the team and was supposed to start until the IK incident that we reminisced on last week happened. BT, I see your point, like, what's he supposed to say? But my big thing is, like, what other NFL head coach coming off the year Glenn's coming off of would say that about a guy who was quarterbacking the only team in the league that was worse than the Jets a season ago? Like, he could have simply said, we think Geno's a good quarterback. We don't think last year is a reflection on the type of player he is. We can't wait to get him in our building and see what he could do with this offense this year. Like, there's just so many different ways he could have said it, because this is the same coach who a year ago, sitting next to Rich at the owners' meetings, wherever they were last year, said he wants the team to move in silence. And it feels like everything since then has been the Jets and him a lot of times making headlines for unnecessary reasons. And like, people are going to make the joke, oh, the promised land, what, getting the number one pick in the draft for Arch Manning?
Yeah, I know. Hey, listen,
deal with it.
This guy, I get it. I understand why people will resist this here. I guess I've just heard so much and seen so much. And really, at this point, I'm almost desensitized and immune to anything that any Jets person says. Just show me a product that's better, please. That's all we all care about. I know that. But, you know, compared, and Rich, maybe you could jump in on this, compared to Robert Saleh, who didn't say a damn thing, who was so vanilla. Like, I thought that we were getting Tarzan. You know, he looks like Tarzan. He kind of coached like Jane. I'm not a big Saleh guy, no disrespect. But for a guy who I thought was going to, like, you know, knock down the walls and, like, give us this energy, he got really soft and really benign and really boring really fast. So Aaron Glenn's got a little flair for the verbal dramatic. That's okay. I'm okay with it.
Well, like I said at the beginning, I'm kind of torn because as a journalist, I like that stuff. You know, that gets us in the headlines. It's good content. You know, looking at it from the other side, though, I think it was just a poor choice of words. I think it was well-intentioned.
Sure.
And I think it probably had a positive effect on Geno Smith. And I know after I tweeted that quote, Garrett Smith liked the tweet. So evidently it's having a positive effect on some of the other players on the team.
Yeah.
I just think given everything that's happened, he got a lot of crap for the superpower quote. Then there was the so-called sleeping incident at the combine. It's just been a rough offseason for AG, and I just think he needs to avoid those verbal booby traps and just stick to the straight football stuff.
BT, Rich Cerini, Jake Asman with you. Jets Collective, hit the like button. Make sure you guys are subscribed to the channel. We will be live every single week.
Yes.
All throughout the upcoming Jets season, including the draft, which is coming up. We're going to be breaking that one down in just a bit. But Rich, just staying with some of the other takeaways from your time out at the owners' meetings, when you were sitting there with Glenn, the promised land comments aside, it did feel like he was way more relaxed in that setting for the first time. So what were some of the other takeaways? What did you observe from listening in on the head coach?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and that's going to get overshadowed because of the one headline, but it was 37 minutes. He was very relaxed. He was very amiable. He was insightful. You know, he got into some, inside football stuff. Very positive, of course, self-reflective, said some of the things he's going to try to improve on. He's pointed specifically to practice reps. I think maybe he wants to dial it back a little bit. Recovery time for players. He's going to really focus in on game management with their game management coach, obviously an area that needs to improve based on last year. So I thought he was great for those other 37 minutes. It was just the one soundbite that overshadowed everything. But yes, a looser, relaxed Aaron Glenn. I think, and the fans may not believe me, but I think he really is trying to be more accommodating with the media. Last year, obviously a rough one in that respect, but I think he is trying to make the effort.
I'm going to use us as an example here, guys. It's a high profile position. Of course, you're the head coach in the NFL of a New York team, a New York based team, Jersey based team, tri-state area. So anything that you say is going to get blown up, good or bad. I get it, right? But I would guarantee that, and I think that our show is already really good. I think that this is going to be the number one Jet show. I believe that with everything that I'm made of, right? But I promise you that if we're to watch this show in 6 months, when we've got God knows how many shows under our belt and the reps and the chemistry, and we learn each other's cadence and how to play off each other, there's a learning curve. And I just think that last year, Aaron Glenn went through some missteps and some trials and tribulations. Number one, the roster wasn't very good. Now, as Rich has said, and we all know this, Jake, he complicated his own world with some of the petty back and forth about the backup quarterback and some of the infighting, whatever. I think he's a smart man. I also think he's a leader of men. As I said last week, I think he's going to learn. I really do, Jake.
Well, it's interesting because it almost feels like a lot of what they have done this offseason is maybe what they should have done when he first took over. Like, now they're making such a point to bring in leaders that know Aaron Glenn. He's calling the defense now. He's taking a bigger lead in certain areas where he kind of delegated to his staff. Rich, it almost feels like a lot of their personnel moves and decisions they made from a coaching standpoint, it almost feels like it's what he should have done in year one. The problem is the 3-14 season happened, and the fact of the matter is he's going to have to win way more than just three games if he's even here now for 2027.
Yeah, it's a good point, Jake. And one of the interesting comments he made on Tuesday morning, he was talking about Demario Davis and Minka Fitzpatrick and David Onyemata, all the, you know, older type guys that he brought in. And his quote, it kind of jumped out at me at the time, not as much as the Promised Land quote, but he said, "We're bringing in a certain level of adult." And so that, to me, that stood out to me. That's basically saying what we talked about last week right here on the show was I felt that there was just an immaturity level, a lack of connectivity on last year's defense. And when he said bring in a certain kind of adult, you know, the Demario Davises and the Onyematas of the world, that was significant to me.
I think that we underrate, even though we all know it, Rich, you live it every day, literally every day. And obviously, Jake, you and I talk about it pretty much every day on some level. I just think that we're kind of obscuring, not even intentionally, just how broken the Jets' home has been. I mean, to get to the Promised Land, you've got to at least construct a viable bridge that's not going to collapse the first step that you take on it. So you've got to get adults. You've got to get rid of, and they have, get rid of some people that have been there for a long time. To turn the page and get the Jets, before you could be great, you've got to be functional. And yeah. I understand we've been waiting a long time, and trust me, I'm getting impatient as well. But let's not lose sight of the magnitude of this rebuild. It's the Jets.
Yeah.
100%.
It's a massive job. And I was talking to Keyshawn Johnson earlier today. And, of course, he's a little biased because Aaron Glenn was his teammate. He loves the guy. He wants him to succeed. And he made a good point, and it just goes back to what Jake said a couple of minutes ago. He goes, no matter who the coach is, he goes, name me a first-year coach without a quarterback who succeeded. He goes, you know, and I agree with him. Ultimately, I mean, a coach's success is directly tied to the level of quarterback play he gets. Mm-hmm. And last year, the quarterback play was way down here, as we know. So let's not, you know, get him a quarterback and let's see what kind of coach he is.
So, Rich, to your point on that, and that's fair, where I struggle is because, like, with Robert Saleh, for example, I know that he was the head coach. Joe Douglas was in charge of the personnel. Like, I can't just blame Robert Saleh for Zach Wilson being horrible. But with Justin Fields last year, Aaron Glenn's the one who said, I signed him. He's never been coached properly. We're going to let him play quarterback. He's the one who hired a first-time offensive coordinator in Tanner Engstrand, who was supposed to be the guy to unlock Justin Fields, who got benched at 4-2 by a Hall of Fame coach in Mike Tomlin. So, like, it's just tough for me to be like, yeah, he didn't have a quarterback, when so many of the decisions, that was the biggest one, but so many of the other decisions also were just so bad that first year that kind of leads to the conversation about, well, is Muji now more involved in that area? Like, it's just tough to forget, like, how wrong they were with Fields. And then you hear Glenn saying, well, Geno Smith's going to lead us to the Promised Land, after he anointed Fields as this guy that hadn't been coached properly.
Well, I don't know about you. I mean, you know, he definitely overhyped Justin Fields last year. But I think we're all knowledgeable football observers. I mean, I wasn't really falling for that. I mean, Justin Fields, we saw what he had done his previous 4 years. So, you know, I didn't buy into the hype that all of a sudden he was going to develop into this really good quarterback.
Did you think he'd be as bad as he was, though?
What?
Did you think he'd be as bad as he was? Because say whatever you want about Fields, he had never played that poor since his rookie year in Chicago.
Well, I don't think he was well coached last year. I think they coached him so – they got him so freaked out about committing turnovers that he was afraid to throw the ball down the field. One thing about Geno Smith, and Aaron Glenn made this point on Tuesday, Geno will take chances. He will push the ball downfield. Now, sometimes it results in a pick, so he got 17 last year, but he will try the tight window throw and give his players a chance. Justin Fields was like a mannequin in the pocket. He was even afraid to run toward the end of the year.
Yeah.
So you'll see a little bit more of a gunslinger mentality at that position.
The concussion, obviously, that's when he stopped kind of running. Listen, the Jets were ready to play week one against the Steelers. We talked, not that we've got to relitigate last year, because God knows we're all trying to move on from it. But think about that opening drive against Miami, 99 yards, shoved it down their throat. Braylon Allen fumbles at the one. They were ready to play that game. They almost beat the Bucs. They were ready to play week one, which to me shows that they had a pretty decent training camp. But I think that, and something, I want to go back to something I said last week. I think this is one of my most important things for the whole year, right? Why I'm much more pro and bullish on Geno than not to the Promised Land, three layers below that. But just to become good and decent and competent and functional, you've got to have a quarterback. You've got to at least be able to know, all right, we drafted Mason Taylor. We think he's a pretty interesting young tight end. We've got to have somebody that's at least willing to throw him the ball if he wins off the line of scrimmage. And to your guys' points, and you're right, Justin Fields wasn't doing that. Brady Cook couldn't do it. So at least we'll even if they go 5-12 and Geno throws 15 picks and 17 touchdowns and a little bit over 3,000 yards and the Jets suck, which they probably will, I at least think we'll get some more intel that will give Muji a better database to build out the team for the next year. And that's when you take the next step. You'll know who's a player and who's not.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And Rich, one thing that Glenn said to you when it might have been your question or one of the guys on the beat asked him, like, who could take a big leap in year two? He referenced Mason Taylor, who I thought at times looked pretty good as a rookie. But do we even know what he was when you had no competent passing offense? So, Brandon, your point, maybe Geno Smith at least gives you a better chance to evaluate the players you already have on your team. And you have four picks in the top 44. We'll get to the receiver conversation, but there's a good chance one of those picks is going to be a young receiver. You're trying to figure out what you have next to Garrett Wilson.
I think everyone who's watching this right now, all the Jet fans, would sign up for an average season for Geno Smith. If the Jets could get average quarterbacking and solid defense and really good special teams, they could win, you know, 7 or 8 games. You know, but the Jets haven't been to the average level at quarterback since probably Ryan Fitzpatrick's year in 2015.
Definitely. When they won 10 games and they lost up in Buffalo. That's the last I mean, well, Rodgers, when he came back, was at least competent. I mean,
there are moments,
but I'm with you. In large part, before that, no doubt it was Fitzpatrick.
So, Rich, in terms of, like, just Muji's press conference, he is, like, the total opposite of Glenn as far as giving you anything headline-worthy. But every time I hear Darren talk, I just think he's a really smart football guy. You're around him a lot more than I am. Just give us your sense on what you learned, if you learned anything, because there's a lot of, you know, gamesmanship and posturing this time of year with the draft upon us. But what did you learn from your conversation, getting a chance to talk with Darren Muji?
Yeah, Darren Muji is the master of saying nothing. You know, he's mastered, you know, he's great at it. He's only been on the job for a year, but he knows how to, you know, do that really well. So I guess my takeaways from him, you know, I thought one of the interesting points someone asked him, I forgot who it was, about how, maybe it was me, I even forget the days are running together. But on, Rich. Like how, no, maybe it wasn't. How do you base a quarterback this? How much do you look into next year's draft when making a quarterback decision, like on Ty Simpson? And so he said, not really that much. Now, I don't know if I totally buy that. You have to be looking ahead to next year when basing your decision this year. He said, they talk about it a little bit. He goes, but you really can't do that. He goes, things can change so much in a year. So I thought that was kind of an interesting thing. He seemed to be in a really good place with the Breece Hall negotiations. Of course, that could be some posturing there as well, but it sounds like they're in a really good spot. I think there's a chance they get a multi-year deal done before the July deadline. And so Muji doesn't say much. He's actually a very personable guy. You know, like you talk to him off camera, very personable, very friendly, but he's got his game face on when the cameras come on.
That's what I want. I want some guy out there yucking it up and, you know, trying to get clicks on social media. Rich, all due respect, Rich, I love you. I don't even care if he makes your job harder. I don't care. I want a guy who's competent and a guy who's not going to be out there just, you know, popping off left and right, divulging state secrets of what the Jets are doing. Operate in obscurity, have a plan behind closed doors. And I think we all agree, because it came up last week on the show, within the margins, you know, special teams, some other things he did last year, picking up some run stuffers. Like, he's shown a nice feel, a propensity to be able to navigate that well, but also take some big swings and get rid of guys with big contracts who are loved by the fan base. So it's a one-year read. I might lament saying this, I think the Jets finally have their GM. I don't know about the coach. I don't know who the quarterback is going to be. Darren Muji, I've got full faith in Darren. As much as I can believe in anybody related to the Jets, I believe in Muji. I really do, man.
I think he's done a good job so far, and I think I might have used this phrase last. You know, he's done a good job of bringing in the Band-Aids. Now he's got to go out, or let's use a baseball. He's hit some singles, maybe a double here or there, but to be like a championship team, you got to start hitting the long ball, and that's what we're waiting to see with this year's draft and then next year's draft.
The swing at quarterback will likely define Darren Muji the same way, you know, Joe Douglas did a lot of good but couldn't overcome the Zach Wilson pick, and we don't need to relitigate that era of Jets football. But Rich, one thing I took note of, and I just hope that this is posturing and this is not, you know, the Jets making the same mistake they made a year ago. Both Aaron Glenn and Darren Muji, when asked about the wide receiver room, said, we love the room. We're going to have Garrett coming back. We like A.D. Mitchell. And I'm sorry, Garrett's awesome. But A.D. Mitchell, I think he had, 24 catches in 8 games as a Jet. There's talent there. Maybe he's a number 3. Arian Smith was a nothing as a rookie. Isaiah Williams, like, maybe he can have a role in the room, but they desperately need a wide receiver. I know you wrote in your notes column on ESPN.com that don't rule out a trade for a veteran wide receiver. Did you learn anything in regards to the Jets' plans at wide receiver, either in a signing, trade, or, of course, the draft coming up in 3 weeks?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a level of posturing that is going on there. They absolutely will draft a wide receiver with one of those first four picks, maybe even two. Who knows?
Wow.
They have to bring in a veteran. I mean, even Arian Smith, I don't even consider him a veteran because he barely played last year. He's a really good gunner on special teams, but, you know, we need guys who can catch passes. They're really high on A.D. Mitchell. That's one of the things I came away with. Glenn is really eager to see what he can do with a full offseason in the program and, you know, hitting the ground from day one. The guy's got vertical speed. We know that. You know, he's like a 4.3 guy. He's a really good kid. You know, he came out of the draft. He had that incident. You know, he didn't interview well, but I think it was just a blip on the screen. He's a really good kid. He's a hard worker. And so they're really banking a lot on him. I think there's a trade has to be a possibility on draft weekend. That some names have been out there. We've talked about Brian Thomas. You got Dontavian Wick from Green Bay. I think he could be available. I do think they will make a lower level wide receiver trade. It's not going to be AJ Brown or anything like that, but I think he's definitely looking to add in that room.
Let me ask you this, Rich, why not AJ Brown? Why not at least make a cursory call and see how willing they are to move on? If he's that big a pain in the ass and he wants to get out, maybe you get him at seven. I know he's a hell of a player. Maybe you get him 80 cents on the dollar. Why not call up Philly?
Well, I don't know if the Jets are on that timeline though. BT, that's a team like the Patriots, maybe one player away or one or two players away. I don't think the Jets are there yet. I mean, they're multiple players away. And I don't know if AJ Brown would want to come and play with Geno Smith as his quarterback.
I think
he'll
that.
Have some say in it. You're talking about, I think, $27 million a year. Of course, they could fit him under the cap. You could always fit a guy under the cap, but I just don't think they want to go that route. I think they want to find their AJ Brown in this year's draft.
Jake, where do you stand on Thomas? Do you like him?
I do like him. I don't think I would trade more than the 44th pick of round two that they have for him, though. And I am a little weary. Maybe, Rich, you have some more insight on this. Why a guy who had 1,300 yards as a rookie is all of a sudden available when the guy in Jacksonville, Liam Cohen, I think is a great offensive coach. He couldn't find any role to utilize the guy that was awesome as a rookie. So I'm a little worried why a guy that was as good as he was in year one is actually could potentially be available going into his third year on a rookie deal.
Yeah, I wouldn't give up the 44th pick, though. I think that's a little high for him.
Really?
That's a pretty high, you know.
I would.
Yeah.
I like him. He's good,
man. I think
he's
more of a third. They don't have a third rounder, thanks to Hassan Reddick trade. But, they could perhaps get one, by moving around a little bit. Brian Thomas had one of the highest drop percentages in the league last year. I heard this from people in Jacksonville the last few days. He didn't want to go over the middle last year. He was just like, and so that's a quick way to fall out of favor with your new head coach. And so he was like a completely different player. I would take a swing on him. I mean, he didn't get 1,200 yards by accident the first year. There's talent there. I don't know if I give up 44, but I would certainly two more years under team control, at a very team-friendly contract. That's very appealing.
Well, the other thing, too, that we were talking about last week, and I think I don't know if Rich you or if it was Jake. I thought it was Rich. We were talking about the Oregon tight end, and Rich, I think that you think that he might be in play for the Jets at number 16, which I find really interesting, and I'm open to it because he tested like an absolute freak. So I'm amenable to it if it lines itself up. But rather than take like the third best wide receiver and try to, if that's where it goes, and try to convince yourself that you really like him, take the tight end who's going to be a vertical threat that you know that you love, if that's an option.
Yeah. I mean, two tight end offense, you see teams around the league doing it a lot more. The Rams did it a lot, last year. I think it's kind of a thing now. And if you line up Mason Taylor and Kenyon Sadiq, that's a lot of matchups, favorable matchups right there, if used properly.
I think we might have buried the lead on something that you said, though, Rich. You think there's a chance at number two overall they actually could take a receiver there? I know Glenn said, hey, if you love a player, just take him, but is number two in play?
No. I didn't mean that. I meant at 16,
Their second, I got it. Their second first round pick, you're saying, yep.
Yeah, no, they're not going to take a receiver at two. I think it'll be a defensive player there. But, yeah, that would be, it's not a great, you know, I talked to scouts. There's not like a total stud receiver in the, there's like three or four good ones. And there's a lot of second round receivers, but not the greatest in terms of high end. They all have something that's a little wrong with them. You know, Tate, maybe a step, you know, half a step slower than you'd want. Jordan Tyson's got all the injuries. But no, not at two. I would think guys, 16.
I'm sorry, Rich. That's why I would be even more aggressive. And again, I know AJ probably doesn't want to be a part of this disaster. He wants to win, understood. But that's why I make the call. That's why Brian Thomas is appealing because, and I think that you're right. There's like three or four names that everybody, you know, throws out there. Like the perception is, wow, this is an incredible wide receiver draft. It's really not. It's intriguing. There's some players that have great upside that if they pop, they're going to be maybe all pros. But there's also some buyer beware signs. So if I could get Brian Thomas, who I already know at the bare minimum, even if he's reticent to go over the middle, is an above average NFL wide receiver with a couple of years of controllability. That's a trade I'm making. I would trade a second round pick for him. Jake, I feel like you're with me on that, right? You would go second for Thomas?
I'd be willing to do it because let me ask you this, BT. If you made that trade, well, what if at pick 33, which has been traded, I think, three of the last four drafts, that's like the most commonly traded pick in the modern NFL draft. What if you traded out of 33 and recouped what you essentially gave up to get Brian Thomas? So maybe cool. Muji has been really smart. Could try and be aggressive and also supplement the aggressiveness by moving down and acquiring picks.
And I'm not trying to one-up you here. And Rich, I'm going to float this your way as well. I have been on my show, on social media a little bit. I would be at least open. I don't know that the Jets are, but I would be open. You want to recoup a pick? Hey, I know who they're connected. They're connected to Reese at number two. They probably wind up taking him. I know we'll talk more about that. But if they like him and don't love him and somebody else does, scoop back from two, get Bailey, get another defender, get Sonny Styles, get Caleb Downs, and then get the extra pick and then go receiver there or recover the pick that you trade for Thomas. Do you think there's any chance, Rich, that they would actually move off the second pick via trade?
Yeah.
All right. Good. Yes.
But who are they dancing with? Who's coming up? It's got to be for Jeremiah Love, right?
Yes.
I mean, who's coming up? I don't think Tennessee's living in the Jeremiah Love world. So, would it be the Giants?
You don't think that? Giants? A lot of people think Tennessee wants to take him. You don't
think Washington would take him, but Washington's what, eight or nine?
Saints are nine, right? I think Commanders are eight, I think, right? Right, Joe? Yeah.
Washington seven, New Orleans seven. Eight, Kansas City's nine.
That's right.
I mean, if
right.
You got a great, would you go down from two to eight?
I would, because I don't love Reese. I know he could run. I know he's got a great intrigue. He's not as polished yet as I would like. I don't think he's a home run second pick. If it was the left tackle, which they don't need, if it was the left tackle that you knew was going to be there 10, 12, 13 years, boom, and I need a left tackle, I'm not moving. But there's other guys, and I mentioned Styles and Caleb Downs. There's other guys I can get my hands on and recover picks. I almost want the Jets to trade out of two. Forget about being open to it. I'm kind of hoping that they do. Like, I actually want them to.
Makes a lot of sense because yeah. You're right. The number two is not a clear-cut pick.
No.
Reese, who I guess if you put a gun to my head right now, I'd say they'd probably pick Reese at two. I think Bailey's a factor. And something I heard in Phoenix, let's not rule out Sonny Styles, by the way.
Good.
Yeah, the Jets got a good long look at him last week in Columbus at his pro day. And I don't think they would do it at two, but they are very intrigued by Sonny Styles. So, yeah, if you could trade down to eight, and get a Styles or, Caleb Downs. Yeah. I mean, and pick up some premium picks in the process.
Yes.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I'm with you on that.
Okay. I think Jet fans would love it. Again, I just think it's tough to try and picture a team as good as Jeremiah Love might be. Yeah. It's tough to picture a team trading that much to move up. Cause if let's play it out. If you're a team that's moving from seven or eight all the way up to two, I'd imagine Darren Muji's asking for the team's first round pick a year from now, right? Like, I don't think you could just do maybe like a second round pick. Like, I don't know. That's enough to go from eight to two.
Yeah, it's a lot for a non-quarterback. Yeah, that's why, I mean, as good as Love is, I should have done my research. When's the last time a team traded up in the top 10 to get a running back? I think Trent Richardson way back when, and that didn't work out, obviously. But, yeah, you just don't see it that often. I think Muji would be totally open to it. I think the phone lines are open, but, who's going to make that call? It's hard to find someone, for a non-quarterback.
You're watching the Jets Collective Episode 2 presented by Prize Picks. So, Rich, as we're on the topic here of some draft buzz, what did you learn about the Jets workout with Ty Simpson? I think it was you who had the report. They didn't just work him out. They took him out to dinner. They had the entire brass there, including Frank Reich, the offensive coordinator. What intel did you gain about the Jets' interest or maybe lack thereof in Ty Simpson, the quarterback at Alabama?
Yeah, they had the two, you know, Muji and Glenn were there, of course, and they brought Musgrave and Reich. So that to me is telling. And they had dinner with him the night before. This was at the tail end of their scouting tour across America, which I was tracking. You know, actually, I tracked it online with the private jet. It's very easy to track, so I could tell exactly what.
That's great reporting right there. Yeah, wow.
Exactly when and where they were going all the way through the country of the tour. But, you know, they got in, you know, they had dinner with him. They did some classroom work. And from what I understand, I mean, no surprise here. He's very impressive on the board, on the whiteboard. He's a smart quarterback. The coaches loved him, but he's a coach's kind of quarterback, you know, like, but is he a scout's kind of quarterback? There's a difference. The scouts are looking for the traits, like the size, the arm strength, the speed, you know, that's not where he checks the boxes. He checks it with his cerebral approach, the ability to get to the line of scrimmage and do the whole Peyton Manning thing, move guys around, read the defense, read the Mike linebacker. He's great at that stuff. So, you know, that's where that's where he impressed the Jets. You know,
Rich, do you remember talking about the grease board? Do you remember what the Jets were saying about Zach? We knew he could throw it, you know, a country mile, you know, rolling out 60 yards on a dime at his pro day. Were they impressed with his classroom work before they took him or no?
You know, that's a great question, but we can't. That was the COVID year.
Yep.
So they didn't have the ability to bring the guy in for visits, and they couldn't do like private workouts. He did his pro day, which I think is the reason they drafted him, because of that one throw he made at the pro day, you know, which went viral on social media. But they only interviewed him on Zoom. So they did all their X's and O's chalk talk stuff over Zoom, and they said he was outstanding, you know, on stuff like that. And I don't doubt that.
Zach's,
he's a smart kid, but it's funny you pick up stuff. And I think we kind of knew this, but just being at the league meetings the last few days and talking to a lot of people, I think there was a lot of sentiment, and I don't think I'm breaking news here, just sentiment to keep Sam Darnold, you know, and it was kind of like a last second, not last second, but all of a sudden a pivot to draft Zach Wilson. So I think for a good part of that offseason in 2021, everyone thought it was going to be Sam Darnold at quarterback, and they made the change, and we know what happened.
So, Rich, you mentioned earlier Darren Muji, when he was asked about, hey, does the 2027 quarterback class, that's supposed to be awesome, does that factor into potentially taking a swing this year on a guy like Ty Simpson? And he said, well, you look at it, but it's not going to influence our decision at the end of the day. You know, Glenn said that they really liked their meeting with Ty, and he also gave some comments talking about the fact that we're not going to just, you know, reach, we're going to go best player available. And then he also said what he said about Geno Smith. So, like, if I'm just connecting dots, it doesn't sound like to me they're going to take him if he's there at 16. But your thoughts, one, on that, and then two, if he's there at 33, if he falls out of the first round, are the Jets drafting him, or would they trade out and maybe allow a team that wants him to come up and get him?
Okay, lots to unpack there. I said this last week, I'm going to be consistent. I'd be very surprised if the Jets took him at 16, just for all the reasons, you know, the lack of starts, you know, the lack of like off the charts traits. Now 33, that's a bit of a different story there. So that one, I'll be honest, I don't have a good feel for what they would do there. You could conceivably take him there, see how it goes for a year. And if he's not showing any sort of progress, then you could go back in and take someone in the top 10 the next year. So that's an interesting discussion. And I don't have an answer. I don't even know if the Jets have an answer right now. This week, the scouts are going back in, I think tomorrow and Friday, to start meeting and building their draft board. And so I'm sure in the next several days to weeks, they'll have a much better idea.
Here's what I want to hear. All right. Because anything other than this would be, I think, bad business, guys. So, you know, you champion Geno, going to take us to the promised land, and we all agree are a little hyperbolic, a little bit much, laid it on thick. Lay it on thick with Ty Simpson, because at the very least, if you project the messaging that you're going to take him, guess what? Your phone's going to ring anyway. It might ring a little bit more vigorously if teams really think that you love this kid and you're going to take him. You got to put that out there. You got to plant those seeds of doubt where, are the Jets going to really take Simpson and then force them to react in kind when they're not really clear-minded and they're kind of scurrying around. What are the Jets going to do? That's how you make a favorable trade when the other team thinks, all right, are they going to bite? Make them think you're going to bite. Let's go.
I asked Darren Mooji point blank. I go, how was the workout? And I think he said, good. You know, he wasn't giving up anything, you know. But, teams smoke screen all the time, you know, as part of the draft experience. And so there are ways teams let it out before the draft, how they're hot for a certain player, you know, even though they're not. And so they still have a lot of time to do stuff like that. And to me, that would be fascinating. Imagine if we go into day two of the draft, Friday night, and they're picking 33 and Ty Simpson's still there. The Jets will have all day to talk about it before they go on the clock. And so the drama, that would be pretty cool drama. That'd be great for TV. You know, that'd be good ratings.
Unless he bombs, I would take him at 33, 100%. No doubt. Unless Mooji was really playing possum and he was awful, which I think we all know he wasn't. Jake, I'm taking him at 33. I'm doing it.
I would do it too. Cause I think he's a guy that you could talk yourself into, because you could say he was so good at the beginning of the year and then Alabama fell off. He played through injury, but he's not your typical quarterback that started only 15 games. Cause one, he's doing it at Alabama. So in practice, he's going up against Nick Saban's players. He was one of the last Nick Saban players that stuck around that program. He's the son of a coach. Like, you could start talking yourself into a lot of things to like about the guy, but not enough for me to do it in the first round. In the second round, you take the swing like the Saints did with Tyler Shuck at pick 36, for example. If it works, great. You might have your guy and you could build your team with those three first. Or if you don't, you're in better position to get a guy. And I don't think you're setting your franchise back necessarily, where if you do it at 16, there's pressure. When does he play? Mm-hmm. What's the timeline? How does that impact Geno? I think it could be a mess in this market. 33, I think it's a little safer if you take him there and it doesn't work out.
Yeah. Go ahead, Rich.
Tyler Shuck played a lot of football in college, though.
He had
a lot of reps. This kid's only started 15 games. You just wish he had gone back to school, you know, because he just hasn't seen a lot. And I know he practices against, you know, the Alabama defense. So, all right, you know, that's a positive. It's not the same as the game reps, though. Being out there, seeing it, you know, it's the old Parcells. I think Parcells, his like list of quarterback commandments was the guy needs at least 30 starts. All right, that doesn't happen as much anymore. But the thing is, with the second round pick, not as much pressure. And you guys know this. The Jets thought that when they drafted Hackenberg in the second round in 2016, figured the same thing. Oh, second round pick. They're, you know, lower the expectations. We know that's not the case in New York, because if they draft a guy in the second round, it's like that means something. And so they're not going to be able to tamp down those expectations.
But Hackenberg never should have been drafted there. Like Ty Simpson, if he's there in the second round.
Period.
Yeah. Right. Of course, that's a whole other story. But like Ty Simpson in the second round, there might be good value in there. Whereas like Hackenberg, like he never should have been picked. So like I'd be okay if they tried it with Ty in round two. I'd be very worried if they did it at 16, because I think that just muddies up the whole timeline. Yeah. He doesn't necessarily need to play at all if you took him in the second round. If Geno's playing well, there's no pressure to go to Ty Simpson.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's, to me, that's one of the key selling points right there. You know, whether Geno's really good or or slightly below, he ain't going to be Brady Cook. So, you know, I really doubt that. I just can't anticipate Geno playing so poorly where everybody's clamoring, you know, Jake, me and you on the pod, and Rich, everybody reading your stories and clicking away and losing their minds. Come on, let's go put Simpson in. Because Geno is an above average, slightly NFL quarterback. And I think that would shield him. But I don't know I'm just saying what I would do. And I'm also of a different mindset of both of you gentlemen, where if I'm going to take him at 33, I am also willing myself to maybe scoot up to the last couple of picks around one to ensure that I get him. Number one, the extra year of controllability. Everybody knows that. And first round versus second round, a little bit more pressure to play him as a first rounder. But if I think he could play, doesn't matter if it's 35, 32, or 27, I'm going to get the kid if I think that he could play.
You got to love him. You can't just like him.
I get it.
You know, it's got to be. Dave Gettleman, didn't he say about Barkley full bloom love or something like that? What was that?
Daniel quote? Jones. Yeah.
Or was it Daniel Jones? Okay. Yeah. It's got to be full bloom love. It just can't be like.
Well, Rich, from being out there, did you get a sense of any other teams that could be in on time? I mean, people will say the Steelers, but I'm not so sure about that. Arizona, of course, but they're picking three, and then they'd have to trade back into the first round if they wanted him. I mean, Cleveland's got two picks. I mean, it's pick 26 is their second first-round pick. Like, you really go and break it down. I don't know how many teams are actually in on Ty Simpson, which is why I think there's maybe a better chance than some realize that he actually could be there at 33 for the Jets.
Yeah, I mean, he's the wild card in the draft. You know, I did get some Cleveland intel. I don't think Cleveland's going to go there. I think Cleveland is in a lot the same position as the Jets are. They might be looking ahead to the 27 draft. They're going to have Watson and Shador battle it out in training camp. Watson will probably win if he's healthy. And then they're just going to let those guys play it out for a year, just like the Jets are going to do with Geno Smith. And then Cleveland's probably looking to the 27 draft. So I don't think Cleveland's going to go Simpson. Arizona is really interesting. It's funny. I spent a lot of at the party on Monday night. I did talk to Mike LaFleur for a while, but I didn't ask him about his quarterback plans. We were talking mostly about Jets, you know, back in the Jets days there. But I probably should have asked him about his quarterback plans. But they're in the same situation as the Jets too. You know, they got two bridge quarterbacks in Gardner Minshew and Jacoby Brissett. So they're looking ahead to 27. So that's why this whole Simpson thing is fascinating to me.
I got a question for both of you guys here. You know, there's got to be a commonality. It could be more than one thing. You guys hit this. Like, the teams that are consistently looking for quarterbacks, draft the wrong guy, don't properly develop the right, you know, don't develop them properly, whatever. Like, what is the common trait? Is it a lack of coaching? Is it a lack of offensive line? Like, is it a lack of identifying truly the right player in the draft? Like, what do you think leads to most misses when it comes to the quarterback spot, guys? I'm curious.
It's a great question. I mean, Rich, I feel like with the Jets in the past, it's been like a multitude of different things. Like with Sam Darnold, I felt like he was the guy in the organization failed to put the right roster and coach around him. Zach Wilson, I just don't think was very good and was overdrafted. So yeah. I feel like sometimes like the prospect just might not be good enough and we always blame the organization and it wouldn't have mattered. Sometimes I think the blame is fair. Like with Sam Darnold, clearly he could have been the guy if they surrounded him with what he needed to be successful. Zach Wilson, though, I never got the sense he was actually good enough to be the guy, even if they, like, again, he couldn't play for Sean Payton. Mike McDaniel, offensive guy in Miami this past year, chose to play a rookie quarterback who they drafted in the seventh round in Quinn Ewers instead of getting a look at Zach at the end. He's the third quarterback in New Orleans now. Like, I don't know. I just think some guys have it, some guys don't, and the organization could be the difference maker if they could raise a guy who does have it, actually allow them to hit their potential as a franchise guy. Yeah.
I mean, we could write a book on that Brandon's question. I mean, because there's so much to – I think Jake is right. I think probably 50% of the time you identify the right guy and then he fails for other reasons, and the other half you're not identifying the right guy. Clearly, Sam had the talent. He's proven that. The infrastructure was terrible. The coaching was terrible. And so it ultimately led to his failure. So, you know, with Zach – I think he was a victim of everything. I don't know if he even had enough talent, but everything around him was not good either. I mean, they threw him out there. There was no veteran backup in the room. And Mike and I talked about this the other night, LaFleur, and he even said this when he was the Jets OC. He came out at the end of the year and said, we failed him because we did not have a veteran backup. And we threw him out there too soon. And so, we could go on and on, Brandon, because it's a great, you know, topic, but obviously the Jets have failed in one way or the other for a long, long time finding a quarterback.
And so the other teams that are pretty much always in the same predicament, that's why I asked the question, you know?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, we could go all night on that one.
We got about 15 minutes left in our show, episode 2 of the Jets Collective, presented by Prize Picks. We saved time at the end for a Q&A, so shout out to the over 430 people watching live right now. Give us the thumbs up button if you haven't. Get those likes up. And make sure if you haven't subscribed to the Jets Collective, you do so. He's Brandon Tierney. He's Rich Samini. My name is Jake Asman. We're here with you every week on this channel, breaking down all things Jets. I mentioned we're presented by Prize Picks. And no matter what sport you're watching, there's no better way to make the action more exciting than with Prize Picks, where it always feels good to be right. Prize Picks is a daily fantasy game made simple. You pick more or less on your favorite players' projections and build your lineup in a few taps, whether it's basketball, football, or anything else you're locked into. It just gives you another reason to stay tapped in to every single play. And that's one of the best parts of Prize Picks. Even if you're watching a random game, once you have a lineup going, you're locked in. Every possession matters. We've been messing around as a show with different ideas for our prize pick lineups. We're going to do a bunch of things for the draft. We're going to do a bunch of things for the Yankees and Mets, the Knicks with the playoff run coming up. So whatever sport you're interested in, they got some great features over at Prize Picks. You can actually cash out early if your picks are going crazy. You can mix multiple sports in one lineup, and there's a community aspect so you can see what other people are playing and even tail their picks. Don't forget to download the Prize Pick apps today and use code HMA. That's code HMA to get $50 in lineups after your first $5 lineup. That's code HMA to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. Prize Picks, it's good to be right. If you guys have questions in the chat, write them in. We'll pull them up on the screen. Tim Thomas with our first one tonight. He says, would you take a flyer on any quarterback this year if Ty Simpson is off the board? Rich, I'll start with you because last year they didn't draft a quarterback in any of the rounds in Darren Mooji and Aaron Glenn's first draft.
I know there's interest in Carson Beck. You know, they had the same crew of guys, you know, in Miami last Sunday or the Sunday before having dinner with him, and then he had his workout. I think to me, we talk about the traits. I think Drew Aller would be the guy to watch. You know, we know what Frank Reich likes as a quarterback. He likes the bigger, strong-armed guys, the drop-back, traditional drop-back passers. So Drew Aller, obviously not a finished product. He's got some shortcomings, no doubt, accuracy, decision-making. But he's a big kid. He's got the best arm in the draft. I would say that would be someone to keep an eye on.
So I just want to make sure I'm going to write this down, Rich. So the only issues are accuracy and reading the field.
That's it. That's it. A day three quarterback. You're trying to find lightning in a bottle. You know, obviously.
Round five, around there.
Okay. Yeah, I think they're going to add a quarterback. I think they got to try to develop that pipeline, and maybe he develops into a backup for you. If you can get 2 years out of make him like your number two guy, then it's worth it.
I want no part of Carson Beck. Jake, do you? I mean, zero part. I don't care what round it is. Not interested.
I see him as a long-term backup if he hits like his ceiling. So I know we laugh at Aller, but at least like there's the tools there if you're just going to take a chance on someone. So yep. I'm okay with it. Honestly, I've given up hope on the Jets ever like getting lucky with their quarterback on day three. We've seen enough Bryce Pettys, and we've seen enough Hackenbergs and Taj Boyd. And I mean, Rich Taj on the beat forever. He can name all of them. Greg McElroy. Like I don't think they're going to find their guy. So I don't really care. Yeah. I mean, take someone, sure. But like there were fans trying to call into my show on the radio or on YouTube being like, they got to play Brady Cook. And we saw what that looked like. I'm kind of over the day three quarterback or the UDFA.
Yeah, but you get a backup nickel. Get a backup nickel corner, will you? Something that's
Todd Boyd was the nicest guy. Todd Boyd was the sweetest guy, but I never saw a guy throw more interceptions in training camp practice than Todd Boyd. It was insane.
He was good at Clemson though, but yeah, he could not throw it in the NFL at all. Yeah, he was a mess.
They took a shot.
Yep.
This question is from Rob, who writes, and other than liking Rich's tweet, is there any news on how Garrett Wilson feels about the Geno Smith trade?
Oh, Rich, what do you think?
Well, I haven't talked to him. I think the like on the tweet probably says a lot. And I think he knows. I mean, we built up the whole Justin Fields Wilson thing last year. I think we overhyped it. I'm as guilty as anyone because I wrote a big feature on those two being reunited, the old Ohio State thing, and it flopped, obviously. I think Garrett knows, putting personal feelings aside for Justin, I think he knows that Geno Smith's a lot better quarterback than Justin Fields. So I got a feeling that Garrett Wilson liked that move.
I think Garrett Wilson's a year away from saying, get me the hell out of here. I really do. It's got to expire at some point. That young man is a winner. He is an inherently phenomenal player, phenomenal competitor, as talented. You know, you go back to Altoon, different types of size and ratio speed, but I think Garrett Wilson's that good, and I think he is so disgusted with the losing that if this doesn't change, and I mean change I don't mean 12 wins, but just become functional and competitive, I think next year, Rich, I think you're standing next to him and he's saying, Rich, I want out. I think this is it. One more shot.
Yeah, I mean, that might have been going on now had he not got hurt last year. But, maybe. You know, his market value, not quite what it would have been if he had been healthy. But, yeah, I think he's in for this year. I agree with everything you said. I think he's the best player on the team. Mm-hmm. And a year from now, who knows? We'll see.
Thunderlips writes in, how realistic is it that the Jets could double dip at wide receiver with two of their first four picks? This has been something I know fans have talked about. Maybe it's not even just wide receiver, maybe just pass catcher if they go Sadiq, let's say, at 16, and then they come around and take a receiver. But how realistic is either a double dip at wide receiver, Rich, or potentially two pass catchers as a move that Darren Mooji makes?
How would you like Sadiq at 16 and the Boston kid from Washington at 33? You know, he's 6'4". He's a good player. And so I wonder how would that grab you guys, you know, double dipping that way, tight end, wide receiver.
I think Denzel Boston. I do like him.
You like him enough to take him like at 32, 33, like in that neighborhood you do? Like 33?
Yeah. Okay. He's a guy I've seen in the first round in a lot of mocks for what it's worth. So there could be good value if he's there at 33. I would understand that pick. He's a good compliment to Garrett, as Rich said.
I don't know why there's, and maybe I'm just living in the moment because we're talking about this, but I feel like the most represented position in all these mock drafts year after year, oh, there's going to be six wide receivers taking a round one, or there's going to be five wide receivers. And then there's two of the five, or, you know, sometimes more if it's even like they're in the second round. Like, I feel like we just overstate the wide receiver market almost every year, probably because we're a fantasy culture. And you want pass catchers and you want to see offense and you know more about receivers than guys in the trenches. You can evaluate them more based on the sheer stats. But is that just me or do you guys feel that too? I think it happens every single season.
Yeah. I mean, wide receivers, I mean, it's look what they're making now. You know, it's like $40 million for a wide receiver. The price is like skyrocketed. The Jets, as Jet fans know, don't have the greatest track record of drafting wide other than Garrett Wilson. Their second round picks at wide receiver have been a disaster. Denzel Mims, Smith from Ohio State, who was always hurt. Yeah. I could go down the list. There's a long list. Not that it has anything to do with now.
Stephen Hill from Georgia. We could get going, you know.
Oh, God.
Stephen Hill looked like an all pro after the first game against Buffalo.
Yeah.
And then he just downhill. Yep.
Well, it's funny because I saw when the Jets acquired Geno, the NFL posted Geno rookie year highlights, and he's throwing to Stephen Hill in some of the cuts. And I'm just like, oh, my God, what world are we living in again?
Geno, man, I can't believe he's back. It's absolutely, you know, I think he's going to be fine, but it's lunacy that he's back. I mean, think about what we're talking about. Geno Smith is the quarterback of the Jets again, guys. What?
Taking us to the promised land, BT.
Let's go.
This is an interesting one. Cisco Lopez wants to know, the most interesting book behind Rich is what?
Oh, I like this fun stuff. Richie, a man of intellect.
Back there?
Yeah.
It's all football stuff mostly. So it's the most interesting book. I don't know.
Dust them off, Rich.
I don't know. I got a lot of Mets stuff. I'm a Mets fan. So I got Tom Seaver. I got a David Wright book. Of course, Ian O'Connor's book on the Rodgers, which I thought was great.
Love Ian Maris guy like myself. Ian O'Connor, shout out. He's great.
Yeah, of course. This is an oldie but a goodie from Mark Kriegel. The Namath book is phenomenal. If you haven't read this one, I highly recommend that.
Kriegel's great.
I got a whole bunch of them there.
Did you write any of them, Rich?
No, one day there'll be one of my books up there.
Okay. What are we waiting for, man? If anybody should be writing a book, it's you. Vaccaro just came out with his George Steinbrenner book. Come on, Rich.
I don't want to. We're in the process. Let's put it that
boy.
Okay.
After the Jets Super Bowl parade with Geno Smith, that's when Rich announces the book.
And you know what the title of the book will be? It's obvious.
What?
Promised Land.
Promised Land.
That's the title of the book.
There you go.
Veteran Jet fan, last chance to get your question. You got a couple minutes left of the show. Make sure you guys are subscribed and we'll be back with you every single week. And then we'll be posting some clips on this channel throughout the week in between shows. So definitely get involved, subscribe, and like the video if you're watching the show live right now or after the fact. Veteran Jets fan says, what are the odds about Breece Hall being traded during the draft? Perhaps to Denver, who had interest in Breece and are looking to draft a running back at pick 62. So we mentioned Breece earlier, Rich. I heard you say that you came away feeling encouraged that the Jets and Breece could get a deal done. Your thoughts on this scenario, though? Could Breece still be involved in a trade?
Yeah, I'd be surprised. I mean, the only way you do that, obviously, is if you're drafting Jeremiah Love, right? Because, I mean, you take him at two. But it's a hard thing. Now, we do see franchise players, you know, we see them in the tag and trade maybe once a year, once every couple of years, it happens. It's a really hard thing to do because how do you do that? I mean, if you draft, as soon as you draft Love at two, you know, then the value for Breece is going to go down because teams are going to know you're trying to trade him. So, and I do think, honestly, and Aaron Glenn articulated this very well, I think he really likes Breece Hall. I think the Jets really want to sign him to a long-term contract. I think he's probably going to wait to Jahmyr Gibbs and Bijan Robinson do their contracts to raise the floor even more, which is a smart negotiating move on his part. And if they don't sign him, they get him for 1 year. You know, at $14 million, it's a lot of money for 1 year. Not ideal, but it's not the worst thing in the world either. So I think Breece Hall will be on the team.
I'm sorry, Rich. I agree with you. You say you'd be surprised. I'd actually be stunned if they trade him. I think Breece is going to be here for a while, and I'm good with that. There was a point where I was vacillating last year where I'm like, yeah, you know what? You already traded a couple of guys. If you can get whatever, a third round pick, which you couldn't get. I think the Kansas City offered the fourth, I think, and they shot that down, Rich. Is that right? Fourth round for Hall, right?
The Jets were looking for a three. I don't know if Kansas City made a formal offer, but Kansas City was a team for sure that was looking. They're obviously out of that market now.
Yeah.
Getting Walker. Denver was the team. I think Denver is why the Jets tagged Breece, because they were worried that Denver was going to come in with some crazy offer. And so that's why he ended up getting tagged. I think he'll be on the Jets this year.
And listen, as do I. And for $14 million, all right, a little exorbitant, I got you. But for a team that's not ready to win a championship, but you're going to have a highly motivated Breece for 1 year because he's got to go out there and prove it again and, you know, put up some numbers. So you would think that you would maximize, you know, his. He'd be all in, and if he's not, then he's just not the right guy anyway. I mean, come on.
Right.
And I just think Breece is a guy, like, you know what he is? He's a good player. We could debate where he ranks among the best running backs, but does anyone dispute if he was on the Chiefs or the Ravens, he'd be putting up 1,200 yards every single year? I just think a big issue we've had as fans watching Breece is they don't utilize his strength as a pass catcher as much. Like, he has not been utilized the way that I think a lot of us envisioned him being utilized when we saw him being this dynamic two-way player as a receiver and a runner.
It's a great point, dude. That's a great point. And how many times do the Jets have a lead where they could just run Breece, where he could get in such a rhythm with 27, 28 carries? I mean, I'm not saying he's never had that kind of a game, but they're always behind multiple scores. You got to throw it, and the only ball that comes his way is a little screen pass because you got to abandon the run.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Frank Reich won't make the same mistake that the previous – offensive staff's made. I think they will try to utilize him in the passing game.
Nice.
This question is from Dan from New York. He goes, BT, why do you have the worst Jets helmet in history your display? I do think of the Adam Gase era when I see BT. I understand his point. We got to get you the new logo.
Yeah, you know, I hear you. I've got one in the man cave downstairs. Right? My wife's from Dallas, big Dallas Cowboys fans. She's from Texas. We've got the flat screen on the wall, and I've got a Jets helmet, the black one, and I've got the silver Cowboys helmet on either side of the TV. Maybe I got to swap out. Like, if I'm going to be doing this from here, which I might be, I kind of like this look more than with the BT Unleashed logo for this show. Maybe I'll swap it out. I'll take care. That's fair, Danny. I got you. I'll take care of that.
We love the Emmy behind you, though, BT. You got to show that off.
We got to show that off. Let's get some Emmys for the show here. What do they call the digital Emmy? Because that's what we're going to get. That's what we're chasing. Let's go.
I love it. A couple quick ones before we wrap. Leader of Jets wants to know, will Joe Tippmann ever play full-time center again? This is, to me, an interesting question, Rich, because no one's talking about the Jets drafting an interior offensive lineman. And what if they're like, okay, we know Tippmann can move back over to center. If they take the Penn State guard, Vega Ione, or however you pronounce his name properly, who's been mocked in some scenarios to the Jets. Is that plausible where Tippmann maybe could slide back over to center and they could have Parham and then Ione be the two guards in the lineup then?
Parham actually can play center as well. In fact, when the Raiders drafted him, they drafted him as like to be their center of the future, and they moved him over to guard. Paid him $7.5 million guaranteed, you know, kind of want to get him on the field if you're paying him that much. I think Tippmann likes guard. I think, honestly, I think he knows guards, you know, get more money than centers. They get paid better. So I think he played well at guard.
He did.
And I think the Jets, I think they like him at guard. So never say never, but I think he'll end up at guard this year.
I'd be totally fine with them, you know, just putting the best five out there. And I agree with you. Just quick follow-up on Tippmann before we wrap. He's a guy that I know there was some talk about maybe an extension getting done at some point this offseason. He's going into the last year of his deal. Any progress in regards to a Joe Tippmann deal, Rich?
Haven't heard. I think that's a post-draft, post-OTA kind of situation. That they've got other fish to fry at this point. So I think there's probably mutual interest there. But like Sauce and Garrett didn't sign. What did they sign? Like in late July last year, mm-hmm. mid-July? So, yeah, that would be the time to start thinking about that.
It's a long list of things they got to do before they get around to Mr. Tippmann. Let's be honest, man. It's called for what it is.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
That is definitely true. The draft, 21 days, 23 hours, 56 minutes, and 40 seconds from right now. But, hey, who's counting with the Jets having four picks in the top 44? We'll be there every week breaking it down for you leading up to the draft and, of course, through OTAs, mini camp all summer long in the training camp. This has been the Jets Collective presented by Prize Picks. BT, the last word, plug your channel, plug your Stephen A. Smith interview, because you had yourself a monster day on YouTube.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I had a banger with my guy, Stephen A., who I first met. Rich, you and I, you know, I used to have you on my old show with 1050 back in the day. That's when I first met Stephen A., when his star was just starting to ascend. He was, you know, he quite frankly just starting to blossom, and ESPN putting all that money behind him. Stephen A., he was on the show for about 2 hours, so BT Unleashed on YouTube. Check it out. Like it. Subscribe, obviously. And, of course, I'm going live every day, Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. And the occasional live after a Yankee game. By the way, Yankee pitching has been absolutely phenomenal. I don't know about those Mets bats there, Richie boy, that have been really quiet. But my Yankees, hey.
Yeah.
I'm the one Yankees. Good, Rich. Yeah.
Yeah. A little quiet for the Mets. But, yeah, so this is a transition week for us because it's kind of the lull in the NFL calendar. People coming back from the meetings. Free agency's pretty much over. Starting on Monday, you know, it's like full focus on the draft.
Can't wait. And if
Jake,
you
what do you got, buddy?
Yeah, more daily Jets content every day on YouTube. I'm actually, you know, speaking of the Yankees, I'm filling in for Michael Kay on ESPN New York on Friday because he's calling the home opener on Yes for the 5-1 New York Yankees.
Nice.
So doing some radio Friday. I'm on Saturday as well from 9 to noon. So a little local radio, and then every day on YouTube. Any Jet fan out there could subscribe there and check out the show. For Brandon Tierney, for Rich Samini, my name is Jake Asman. Big thank you to everyone who tuned in. We had well over 400 people watching live. We'll have thousands after the fact. This thing's going to be a monster. Make sure you are subscribed to the channel. We will be back next week. This has been another episode 2 of the Jets Collective right here on YouTube.